I was asked to dedicate our shir this morning, Le'ilei Nishmas, Mordechai ben Yitzchak, whose yard site is next week on Chaf Iyar, and he is. They are commemorating his 36th yard site. So they asked to remain anonymous, but we hope that our Dibrei Torah would be an Eloi HaNeshama for him. As we know, this week we are going to commemorate Lag BaOmer. And on Lag BaOmer, there is a lot of discussion about Reb Shimon ben Yochai. And very often when we talk about Reb Shimon ben Yochai, the conversation leads into a discussion of Kabbalah and Sisrei Torah and the light that was brought into the world by the Zohar HaKadosh. These, I have to be honest, are topics and issues that are way out of my league and way beyond my understanding. Maybe you all understand these things, or when you hear Shiurim about this, somehow you follow. I don't. So I don't try to engage in things that I have no understanding of. But Reb Shimon ben Yochai has so many other critically important lessons and teachings throughout the Gemara and the Mishnayos, and perhaps we can focus on one of them this morning that is so, so important, and I believe it's important particularly in our generation. It's not something that's unique to our generation, but it's something that perhaps has become exacerbated in our generation and is worth considering more than ever before. We live at a time when the world is full of people who go to the extreme about everything. People who lack nuance, people who don't appreciate subtleties in life, and people who lack perspective and context in what it is that they see. We often find those who we interact with lack a sense of objectivity. They're not able to see things clearly. They're just so extreme, whatever they see on the news. If they happen to watch Fox, they think one way. If they happen to watch CNN, they think in a totally different way. And there's nobody who can think just straight anymore. Everything is so extreme. And one of the many consequences of this very hostile society that we are all living in now is the fact that people feel they have a full license to shame and humiliate and destroy the lives of other people. And it's something that's very painful, and it's something that perhaps we don't even realize the consequence of what it is that we do or what it is that other people do that we are accomplices to, but it's something that we really need to think about very, very carefully. We're living in an age of social media, and we see on Twitter how somebody will post something very innocently or maybe not so innocently, and it's so destructive to another human being, and we don't realize that other person has a life, has a job, has a family, and all of that can be destroyed by one comment that we make. I can't tell you how many times I have been subject to this, obviously not on such a great scale. I have, with my father being attacked in the newspapers all the time when we were growing up, and still, I guess I'm still growing up, but this happens all the time. People fabricate stories, people say whatever they want without corroborating, totally unsubstantiated, and they just write whatever they want. And they don't take responsibility to the fact that there's a family, there's a person, there's a community, there are people who are represented by this individual. I do remember vividly there was somebody who wrote a full front page attack on my father. And it was something that was a complete fabrication. But it didn't stop this person. And I remember a week later, this individual sent my father a personal email apologizing. And he felt really bad about it. And I was so enraged. My father took the email and just, you know, he didn't care at all. He didn't care about the article in the first place. He didn't care about the email. Both ways didn't bother him at all. But I, as a child, was so enraged by this person. You know, you go and you write a front page article attacking somebody, and then you cowardly go and send them a private email asking them for forgiveness. Like, life doesn't work that way. Go to the front page where you printed the first thing and print your shameful email that you just sent us as a family. So I was in the middle of responding to this person. My father happened to walk into the room, which never ever happened, that he just walked into the room while we were doing things. And he asked me, "What are you busy with?" I said, "I happen to be responding to this person." He said, "What are you responding for? Why are you responding? What are you getting so agitated?" He said, "People write things, so they write things. Let them write what they want." I said to him, "It's very nice that you happen to be a great tzaddik and that you don't get bothered by these things, but the rest of us in the family are human beings. And the rest of us, it does bother, and it's very hurtful, and it's very hard to walk around with this. And people don't realize that these are things that are done all the time, and they don't realize the fallout of doing such things. On my end, I can say, how many times, I don't even remember how many times it is anymore, where somebody happens to be a little turned off by something that may have been said by a shir or a drasha. It happens, you can't please everybody, especially when you have hundreds of people in the room. And instead of sending you an email or calling you on the phone to discuss what it is they thought you said, which you didn't say, but what it is they thought and they interpreted that you said, they send an email to you copying the entire board or the entire membership or doing something to outright embarrass and humiliate you without having the decency to talk to you face to face. And this is something that is so important. The Al-Sheikh writes in the very beginning of Sefer Bereishis, the Torah says in Parshas Noach, Shofech dam ha'adam, ba'adam damo yishafech. And it's not clear exactly how to interpret what that pasuk means. Shofech dam ha'adam, ba'adam damo yishafech. What does it mean that I spill someone's blood inside of a person? How do you translate the words? And the Al-Sheikh writes, Shofech dam ha'adam be'adam means zeh ha'mevayish as chavero. Somebody who chooses to publicly humiliate another human being, you are murdering that person while they're still alive. Understand that the person is still here and they're still looking at you, but you are murdering that individual, and understand the consequence of those actions. And the Chafetz Chaim writes the same idea in his Sefer on Chumash, perhaps interpreting that pasuk. And that's really what I want to focus on today, because Reb Shimon ben Yochai is the one who has very strong words about Hamavayish es Chavero. Just by way of introduction to that, I took something from an article that I read and I find it interesting, just to give a little bit of a context and to think about some of these examples that we gave. So the author of this article writes, he remembers that when he was in grade school, the teacher once in a while would call out a child and say, "You go stand in the corner." Right? Who remembers? I think teachers don't really do that anymore, I assume. I'm not a teacher, but it's a strange thing to do. But back in the days, it's what teachers used to do. And this person writes, it's another form of student punishment. You can sense the eyes of your classmates on your back. Yes, I ended up in that corner plenty of times when I was in elementary school. And the way he describes this really spoke to me. He writes, where you feel the sense of embarrassment that the whole class is staring at you, as you wiggle with a hot flush of embarrassment, sometimes you stood there for an hour, or at least it felt like an hour. These were ways, even for kids, to be publicly humiliated. The idea was, if you shame someone in front of their peers, maybe they'll think twice about repeating the offensive behavior. So we understand where it comes from. However, he writes, that was back then. What do we do today? Today, someone parks a car over a yellow line, we take a picture of their license plate and share it on Facebook with our friends so that everyone in the world can mock them. You don't like an email that you got from your child's teacher? You post it online for the whole world to see with their name on it so that everybody can make fun of the email that was sent to your parent body. We live in an attention-seeking, social media-driven world where people thrive on getting their 15 minutes or going viral. We crave the validation, the approval, and the attention in order to feel seen, heard, and understood. We want to be noticed and liked, but where does it end? And what is the price of all this public shaming, especially when children are involved? We don't always think of the consequences of sharing that photo or posting that video. We forget that there is a person, a family, a child who is impacted by converting a private mistake into a public flogging. I think that's a great way to say it. There are lives at stake, and these are actual people. The speed at which information can travel, the frequency of anonymous shaming, the size of the audience it can reach, and the permanence of this information is what separates digital shaming from shaming of the past. So while it's true that back in the days they used to have one student stand in the corner, and that was an embarrassing, humiliating moment for that child, but today, the speed at which we share things and the magnitude on which the platform on which it is shared makes us be so much more responsible for what it is that we do. Before you send that email, you better think 100 times. Before you post that thing, you better think 1,000,000 times what it is that you're posting, who it is that is going to pay the price for what you're doing. Being a victim of public shaming has the potential to ruin your life financially, emotionally, and psychologically. In the most extreme of online harassment, we have seen the worst case repercussions over and over again of young people taking their own lives and adults losing their livelihoods. This is not a one-time event. This happens all the time. And it's something we certainly need to think about. So we look at a Gemara Maseches Brachos. It's also quoted in Maseches Bab Metzia and a Maseches Ksubas. Over and over again, the Gemara quotes this position of Reb Shimon ben Yochai. And it sounds very extreme, but it's a very important position to consider. So the Gemara says, Amar Rab Yochanan Mishum Rab Shimon ben Yochai. The Gemara tells us a statement in the name of Rab Shimon ben Yochai. Noach lo la'adam sheyapil as atzma letoch kivshan ha'esh va'al yalbim p'nei chaveiro barabim. Va'al yalbim p'nei chaveiro barabim. Before going and being engaged in a public shaming, the Gemara says one has to be willing to throw oneself into a kivshan ha'esh. I sometimes wonder, people who post things on social media that are humiliating to others, people who send in ads or articles to a newspaper that they know are so dangerous and detrimental to another family, I want to know if those people have ever thought about being mapil atzmam letoch kivshan ha'esh. Have they thought for one second about the damage they're about to cause and about the perspective that the Gemara gives that one needs to have before being engaged in public shaming? How do we know that? It sounds like an extreme position. You have to be willing to throw yourself into a furnace instead of publicly shaming someone, instead of demeaning and embarrassing them. And the Gemara says we learn it from the story of Yehuda and Tamar. And there the Psukim tell us the amazing story. It's a painful story, but it's an amazing story about Yehuda and Tamar, his daughter-in-law. He was not aware of who she was. Hard to explain exactly what happened. The Rishonim on Chumash, the Ramban, and Rashi all tried to explain exactly what happened. But basically, at some point, Yehuda had a relationship with his daughter-in-law, unbeknownst to him that that's who it was. It says that she was standing outside in a dark evening. They went into a dark home. And really, they were not sure what was going on. It turns out that she became pregnant. And then later on, this was something that was brought to the attention of Yehuda, because Yehuda was a dayan. And they wanted to prosecute Tamar for having an affair. And they got into a whole discussion, and Tamar was about to be killed. Tamar was about to lose her life. She was about to be burnt as a result of this terrible mistake. And finally, she approaches Yehuda in private, and she says, I want you to understand, I am impregnated from you. And the Gemara says, you see from that story, from the fact that she was not willing to stand up in front of everyone and tell them what happened, she went privately to Yehuda and gave him a sign to let him know that it was her and him that had the relationship together. The Gemara says, from here we learn that we need to be willing to even give up our lives as opposed to shaming someone publicly, even if they deserve it. Even if they deserve it. Yehuda deserved it, but yet she was not willing to do that. Rabbeinu Bechaya writes an amazing comment in the end of Sefer Bereishis. We have the story that's always puts us in, you know, we're just spellbound by the details of the story of Yosef and his brothers. And it says, "Velo yachal Yosef lehisapek." He wasn't able to hold it in anymore. He was being so patient for all that time, trying to just build up the excitement of his brothers and finally revealing himself to them. However, what we find is that right before he reveals himself to his brothers, he asks, everybody else has to leave the room. Everybody has to leave the room. Do you think the President of the United States would ever be left alone in a room with a whole group of people with nobody protecting him? You're allowing yourself to be destroyed. All those people can just turn on the king and kill him. And yet Yosef said, that is the choice I need to make. Rabbeinu Bechaya explains, yes, Yosef knew full well that he was endangering his own life by doing that. But he said, I cannot have it any other way. I need to reveal myself to my brothers. They will be totally humiliated. They will be shamed. Everybody will hear about the story. I cannot have that on my hands. And if it means that I endanger my life and I ultimately lose my life, it's worth it. It's worth it. Because I'm not prepared to have it any other way. And this is what the Mishnah writes in Pirkei Avos. Kalamaldim p'nei chavera barabim. It's in the third parak of Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah has an amazing statement that we'll get back to later. Kalamaldim p'nei chavera barabim. Somebody who is involved in public shaming, and it doesn't only mean standing up in someone's face and shaming them. It means sending that email, it means writing that article, it means posting on social media, it means forwarding that WhatsApp that somebody sent you that was embarrassing about somebody else, but you send it forward and you allow that to be perpetuated. All of that, says the Mishnah. Af al pi sheyesh biyado, Torah umasim tovim. You can spend your entire life learning Torah, doing chesed, being a wonderful Jew. Ein lo chelek la'olam haba. I want to ask you, how many violations, how many transgressions are there in the Torah where we have this statement, Ein lo chelek la'olam haba? Not too many. You can eat on Yom Kippur. You still have a chelek in olam haba. You can be a mechal Shabbos. You still have a chelek in olam haba. You can go to a non-kosher restaurant with ill intent, not by mistake. You can go and eat non-kosher food, treif. You still have a chelek in olam haba. But yet the Mishnah tells us, somebody who spends their entire life engaged and engrossed in Talmud Torah, Maisim Tovim, doing wonderful things, but they are involved in Malbim Penei Chavera Barabim, writes the Mishnah, Ein Lo Chelek La'olam Haba. You're playing with fire. And that's the way the Mishnah describes this kind of activity. Rabbi Avad Yosef has an amazing tshuva where he talks about the minhag that many communities have to have a Purim spiel on Purim night. And he says it's very sweet and it's very nice and it's all done in jest. But he says, if you are the butt of the joke, it's not so funny. It's not always so funny. If you're the one who they're making fun of, and you're the one who they're pointing out your flaws to the whole community, he writes that he was asked whether this is a custom that we should continue, or perhaps this is totally inappropriate. And he gives his opinion. In the end, he writes an amazing statement, and that is, he shares a story about Reb Shimon Sofer, who was the son of the Chassam Sofer. And he says, Niftar Meirov Agmas Nefesh. He writes that Reb Shimon Sofer died because of the embarrassment that he suffered because of Divrei Elbono Shehutchu Klapov Al Yedei Rav Purim. On Purim night, they had somebody who got up in the town and made a Purim spiel and thought it was funny. And the butt of the joke of the whole evening was Reb Shimon Sofer. And Rabbi Avad Yosef writes that it is documented that this Talmud Chacham, the son of the Chassam Sofer, lost his life because of the humiliation that he suffered from that evening, sitting and listening to this embarrassing information about himself. Rabbi Avadya says, Hashem HaTov Yechaper Ba'ado. I hope God can find a place somewhere to atone for this individual that caused that. So it's a frightening statement, but there are so many stories. Rabbi Aaron Cutler has an amazing story. He was the Rosh Hashiva in the Lakewood Yeshiva, and he says, you know, I travel around the whole world and I try my best to raise money for the yeshiva, but he says, I find it so difficult. There's such struggles to raise the quota that I need. And he said, I often ask myself, why is it that a Rosh Hashiva has to work so hard to bring in the funds that are necessary to run the yeshiva? Wouldn't God want it to be easier for me? After all, I'm doing something good. Why does he put so many obstacles in the way? Why do I have to fly around the world? Why do I have to be away from my family? What's the reason for all of this? Rabbi Aaron Cutler said, perhaps, he says, the reason why is because Nichshalim heim b'shogeg b'halbanas panim. One who's in a position of authority, like a Rosh HaYeshiva, inadvertently, every so often, this is not me saying it, this is Rabbi Aaron Cutler saying about himself. He says, inadvertently, will humiliate somebody in the process. You have a whole group of students, you have a whole classroom, you say something you shouldn't have said to one of the students, everybody else is laughing, you make fun of them, you make a quick comment, you don't even realize what the outcome is. And he says, it is impossible that I have not humiliated someone over the years inadvertently. Obviously it was with good intent, but somebody must have been hurt over the years. After all, that's the position I hold. And he said, I deserve every bit of this running around the world as a punishment. It's an amazing statement of Rabbi Aaron Cutler, who is a tzaddik yisod olam. If you ever read anything about him, you understand what a pure neshama he was. What an amazing, towering personality. But yet he said about himself, he has no doubt that he deserves this. Because once in a while, a person in a position of authority, and I often think about the story, a parent is in the same predicament. We have no right to humiliate our children either. But every so often you watch how a parent stands in the park watching their kid, and the child does something, and instead of the parent going over privately and saying something to the kid, the parent says something out loud. Children also have feelings. Maybe it's easier for them to forget about it, but they also have feelings. And we need to be aware of that. And that's something that Rabbi Aaron Cutler tells us, anyone who's in a position of authority needs to be so careful about this Isser of Halbanas Panim, and we may not even realize it. Humiliating one child in front of their own siblings, humiliating a child in front of their own friends in the park, all of this is part of the same issue. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach tells the story about how there was somebody in yeshiva who got up to daven for the Amud one day, and he had a horrific voice, absolutely horrible. Every so often you have that person who just is so lacking of self-awareness that they don't realize if you don't know how to sing, just don't try. Put your efforts and energy into something else. But not only did he try, he got up and davened for the Yamid on a Friday night, and the whole yeshiva was laughing. And everybody was smirking and winking at each other and just laughing behind this guy's back. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach sat there in the front of the yeshiva, kept a straight face, and sang along with this guy. And afterward, they asked Rav Shlomo Zalman, how did he keep a straight face? That was the most ridiculous thing we've ever heard. And he looked back at them in shock, and he said, anything else would have been halbanas panim. Any other response, had I allowed myself to even smile for a moment, would that not have been humiliating to that individual? So what was the alternative? What option did I have? And finally, an amazing story that the Maharsham writes. He says, you know, every so often you meet a person who we refer to as a chassid shote. Yeah, you heard it right. The Gemara talks about a chassid shote. Somebody who thinks that they're so pious, but they are a pious fool. And as a result of their piety, they decide there has to be destruction along the way. So the Gemara talks about such people. The Gemara says, for example, there's a woman who's drowning in the pool. There's a woman who's drowning in the river. And a very pious man who's walking by and actually knows how to save somebody's life and pull them out of the water says, I would love to save you, but you know, I'm not really allowed to touch a woman and I'm not allowed to see you this way and you're in a bathing suit and what should I do? You're a fool, says the Gemara. Chassid shota, you idiot. That's what the Gemara calls such a person. So you're watching somebody lose their life and you're busy worrying about all of these cheshbonos, all these things that are irrelevant at this moment. Yes, it's true. You shouldn't be touching women and you shouldn't be looking at them that way, but not right now. This is not the time. It's not appropriate to think that way now. Right now, your job is to save that individual and not to shirk your responsibility. So the Maharsham tells an amazing story where he says, we know that there's a bracha that's supposed to be made of Mishana Habrios, when one sees an individual who looks different. Now, nowadays, how often do we make a Mishana Habrios? We are accustomed to seeing all kinds of people all the time. So this is not so common that we have this bracha that really is recited. But the Gemara says there is such a bracha of Mishana Habrios where we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for making people different, for making people look different. And all of that is fine, and it's all part of the world that we live in. So he tells a story about an individual who once went out to the market, and it was a very crowded marketplace, and he sees down out in the corner of the supermarket, he sees that there was a midget. And he's so excited, he never in his life saw a midget. First time he ever saw such a thing. And it's the first time in his life he's ever able to make the bracha Mishana Habrios. He's never seen anybody that looks so different before. So he writes, a big kriyas yamsev. He splits the whole store apart from each other, and he says, you know, when I make a bracha normally, my wife hears me make a bracha, my children, they answer, amen. Now I have a packed supermarket. Birov HaMadras Melech, I'm going to make this bracha. The whole supermarket is going to answer the bracha. This is amazing. What an opportunity of a lifetime. He walks up to this midget, picks him up on his shoulders, and he says, Tafas Oso Nanas Kelulav. He says he shakes this midget like a lulav, and he's so excited, chuckling with the kavana of his bracha that he's finally able to make in his life over this midget that he finally met. And the Maharsham writes, boy, do I feel bad for that foolish individual who thinks he's doing the right thing. Shahafach mitzvah liritzicha. That he took a mitzvah opportunity and he used it to murder someone. It's an amazingly powerful statement. Shahafach mitzvah liritzicha. That he took a mitzvah opportunity and instead murdered an individual as a result. All that hiding behind the guise of the mitzvah that he may have wanted to do. What a tragedy, says the Maharsham. But how often do we see in our own lives that that's what happens? People are well-intentioned. People want to do a good thing. But they don't think about the consequences. They don't realize, they don't understand what the outcome is going to be. So the Rishonim discuss, actually the Rush writes in the name of the Gaonim, the Rush writes an amazing comment in Maseches Baba Kama, that if there's somebody in town who is Malbim Penei Chaver Barabim, take out an ad against another person and humiliate them publicly, the Rush writes that the custom was they would put that person in Chayram. Not allowed to come to shul anymore, not allowed to send your children to the schools anymore, totally excommunicated from all that goes on in community life. Amazing. But that shows us how extreme the Rishonim and the Gemara and Chazal take this kind of activity. So the Rambam says, how do we know that there's a prohibition of halbanas panim? Where does it come from? What is it all about? And he writes, we learn it from a pasuk in Sefer Vayikra where the Torah says, Lo sisa alav chet, hocheach tochiach hasamisecha. We have an obligation once in a while to correct those in the world who are doing wrong. Now again, the provision is, it's only if we actually think they're going to listen to us. It's only if we really think there's a realistic possibility that they will take our words to heart. So just to make a statement for the sake of making a statement is worth nothing. But to go and pull someone aside and tell them, by the way, we see this character flaw, and maybe this is a way you can help yourself work on it. Maybe this is a way you can rehabilitate. That's an obligation that we have. Hocheach tochiach hasamisecha. However, the end of the pasuk says, Velo sisa alav chet. The Rambam interprets that to mean, when doing so, when giving tochacha, that is warranted, be mindful of the fact, lo sisa alav chet. Don't allow yourself to humiliate and shame that person. And as a result, you will be in violation of a sin. I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to help this person. But be mindful of how you're helping them. Be mindful of the fact that if you help them in a way that it embarrasses them further, you're not really helping them at all. And the Rambam says, if somebody is not mindful of that, avon gadol hu. Therefore writes the Rambam, lefikach tzarach adam lehizar shelo levayish chaver barabim bin katan bin gadol. Doesn't mean only somebody who's your age or your peer. It means even young children, the Rambam says, are included in this prohibition of lahalbim pene chaver barabim. And an example he gives is, lo yikro lo b'shem shehu bosh mimenu. You can't call someone a name that you know they're going to be embarrassed of. I remember in school they used to call me Shorty. I was very short, still not so tall. I'm sure it hurt me then. I have no recollection now. And I wasn't the only one that was picked on. Everybody was made fun of. It's exactly what the Rambam says. To call somebody a name, shehu bosh mimenu, that they are embarrassed of, it's not a name that they're proud of. That is all included. Not only that, the Rambam says, "V'lo yisamper lefanav davar shehu bosh mimenu." How often do you see somebody knows information about another person, and they just share the information in a way that that person understands that I know? So nobody else in the room knows what I'm referring to. Nobody else in the conversation is aware of what I'm alluding to, but the person who needs to hear it is well aware of the fact that now I am aware of this embarrassing piece of information about them. The Rambam says that too is something that is part of this humiliation. Lo yisaper lefanav davar shehu bosh mimenu. And the Rambam there adds an important condition where he says, this is when we're talking about matters of ben adam lachavero, but when it's matters of ben adam lamakom, so then we need to think differently, we need to correct the wrong in different ways, whatever it is, that's just the detail in the halacha. But the Rambam says this is an important halacha, and that's where we learn it from. And the Gemara, as we mentioned before, says, Noach lo la'adam, sheyapil atzma latoch kivshan ha'esh. We should be willing to take that preference of being thrown into a burning fire. Val yaldim p'nei chaver barabim. So the Meiri asks, is that to be taken literally? Does that really mean what it says? There are many statements of the Gemara that are a little bit of an exaggeration, that are hyperbole every so often, and only trying to emphasize the severity of the issue. And the Meiri writes, this is one of them. The Gemara wants to emphasize to us how severe it is to humiliate another person. And in doing so, the Gemara says, Noach lo la'adam sheyapil atzma l'toch kivshan ha'esh. The Gemara wants you to take a step back and be shocked by such a comment, and then you'll think twice about violating this the next time you have an urge to do so. But it's not to be taken literally. That's what the Meiri writes in a number of places. However, the other Rishonim disagree. The other Rishonim feel that this is actually a literal comment that is to be taken to the actual words that it says. So much so, Tosfos asks in Maseches Sota an amazing question. We know that there's a general concept that if one's life is at stake, and the alternative is to violate one of the mitzvahs HaTorah, I'm supposed to violate the mitzvah in the Torah and save my life. So for example, somebody holds a gun to a Jew's head and says, eat this non-kosher sandwich. So obviously, the painful situation that they're in, but the choice they're supposed to make is, eat the non-kosher sandwich and save your life. Even though we consider kashrus to be a very important mitzvah, it's not more important than my life. There are three exceptions to the rule, as we know, and those are avodah zarah, gilui arayos, shfichas damim. So Avodah Zarah Gilui Arayos Shfichas Damim means, were someone to hold a gun to a person's head and say, either I'm going to kill you, or your other option is to have this kind of inappropriate relationship with another person, I have to be willing to take my life as opposed to option B. That's what the Gemara tells us. So Tosfos asks, we call these the Shalosh Averos Chamuros. We call these the three cardinal sins. Tosfos asks, aren't there four cardinal sins? Why do we always say this as three? There's really a list of four. It's Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim, and Malbin Penei Chavera Barabim. Tosfos asks, there are really four in the list. If somebody comes with a gun to my head and says, the only way I'm going to save your life is if you share a piece of embarrassing information about another person and you humiliate them, then I won't kill you. What am I to do? Tosfos writes, obviously, we all know that I would be willing to give up my life for them. Who would think otherwise, Tosfos says. And if that's the case, how is it that we always refer to this as the Shalosh Averos Chamuros, as the three cardinal sins? Really, there are four cardinal sins. Does that give you an understanding of what we're dealing with here? Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim. The worst things a Jew can do. There's a fourth. And the fourth in that list is Malbim Penei Chaver Barabim. Rabbeinu Yonah writes the same thing. In the Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah writes it explicitly, that he believes that one has an obligation to give up their lives not only for Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim, but one has an obligation to give up their life as well not to embarrass another person. An amazing statement. An unbelievable comment. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a little bit of an extreme, but an amazing question. And he says, as we know on Shabbos, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Yuma, if somebody's life is in danger, we're Mechal Shabbos. If somebody hurts themselves on Shabbos and we're afraid that there's really a life-threatening situation, you call Hatzalah. Hatzalah comes, they drive their cars, they're violating Isur D'Oraisa. They're doing it for a noble purpose. It's okay. Of course they're allowed to do it. They're encouraged to do it. But they're allowed to do it because human life is so important. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, imagine in your mind you can conjure up a situation where you're able to save somebody from public humiliation. But it happens to be Shabbos. You know the newspaper is about to print an amazingly stunning, embarrassing article about your friend. Happens to be Shabbos. It's going to print. The only way to pull it is to go drive in your car to the printer and stop them. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach asks, he wonders, how come nobody ever thought about that case? If I'd be allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to save somebody's life who's in danger, maybe I should be allowed to be Mechal Shabbos when somebody's life is about to be destroyed because of humiliation. It's the same thing. It's an amazing statement. It's an amazing question that he asks. And it's something that I think just frames this issue and gives us a little bit more of a context. But Rabbeinu Yonah asks a very important question, and that is, imagine Rachmana Litzlan. Rachmana Litzlan, you have somebody, you know, we hear about all these terrible shootings that are going on in the world. Imagine Rachmana Litzlan, you have a Jew who's involved in a murder. And it's inexcusable, but in the end of the day, we do have a concept of tshuva, so we're going to take the person, throw them into jail for the rest of their lives, whatever it is. In the times of Chazal, we would give them the death penalty, whatever it might be. What's the outcome of that individual, of the murderer? La'achar me'ev esrim shana. They're going to stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're going to have a din v'cheshbon to make, they're going to have to answer why it is that they did this, how it is that they can do such a thing, they're going to have to pay a very heavy price, whatever it is. In the end of the day, after they sit in Gehenna for as long as they need, will the Ribbono Shel Olam allow them into Olam Haba? What's the answer? What's the answer? It's not a trick question. All those who say this person gets a chelek in Olam Haba, raise your hands. Yes. The Gemara says, "Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek l'Olam Haba." Hey, all of us expect to have a place in Olam Haba. All of us make mistakes in life. Now, granted, none of us are ever going to make that mistake. That's a really big error. That's a really big problem. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a lot of rachmanus. And even that person deserves a place in Olam Haba. Now, it may not be a wonderful place in Olam Haba, maybe a seat down in the bleachers or beyond, but maybe you'll have a place in Olam Haba. Why not? Why shouldn't you have a place in Olam Haba? You've done something wrong, you did your tshuva, Kadosh Baruch Hu made you suffer for it, you paid the price, time to move on, you get Olam Haba. Here, Rabbeinu Yonah says, this is paradoxical. Somebody who actually murders has a chelek in Olam Haba. Somebody who's involved in halbanas panim, which is similar to murdering, right? The Gemara says, if you're malbim penei chaver barabim, if you humiliate another person, it's tantamount to murder. It's similar to it. And yet the murderer, him or herself, gets a chelek in Olam Haba. But the person who's involved in public shaming and public humiliation loses their chelek in Olam Haba. How can that be worse? How does that make sense? You lost your chelek in Olam Haba. How is it worse to be involved in shaming somebody else than it is to do the act of murder itself? It's an amazing question. Rabbeinu Yonah asked this question, and he explains as follows. And he says, as outrageous and horrifying as it is to be involved, rachmana litzlan, in a murder, as serious of a crime as that is, over time the person is able to appreciate and understand, they're able to recognize the evil that they've caused, the hurt and the harm that has come to the other individual or to the family. They may not understand it right away, but over time, they're able to have an appreciation for what it is that they've done, for what it is that they've caused harm to a family, to an individual. They understand the magnitude and the extent of the damage that they've caused. Writes Rabbeinu Yonah, somebody who humiliates another person will never come to an understanding or appreciation of what they have caused to that other person, to their family, to their community, to those who love them. It is impossible for you to ever appreciate how painful it is. People think, yeah, okay, they moved on, they were embarrassed, it happened, life moved on. You will never appreciate, says Rabbeinu Yonah, how painful that experience is. How painful it is not only for that individual, but for everyone involved, for all the people who have the fallout because of what you've done. And therefore, says Rabbeinu Yonah, that is something that Shuvah cannot help for. A rotzeach mamish, an actual murderer, will have a place in Olam Haba. A malbim penei chaver barabim will never, ever have a place in Olam Haba, because they cannot understand the gravity, the intensity, the profundity of the damage that they have caused. The psukim say in Parshas Vayikra that we have something that we refer to as a karban chatas, and we have another karban that's referred to as an asham talui. Karban chatas is something that we bring. Somebody, let's say, is mechala Shabbos b'shogeg. I walk into the room, I turn on the lights. I'm not intending to be Mechala Shabbos. I mistakenly was Mechala Shabbos. Not a horrible Jew. I made a mistake. I forgot it's Shabbos. I forgot this is Usser. Whatever it might be. So in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, you bring a Karban Chatas. Good. Asham Tali means, if somebody is not sure whether they violated an Avera, somebody is not sure whether they did something wrong, so I have to bring a different Karban. It's called an Asham Tali. What is the difference? So the Gemara says in Maseches Vachim, how much money, what's the minimal amount of money that I need to spend on a karban chatas? Let's say there's a big sale on animals, and I'm able to get away with a real cheap animal. What is the minimal amount that I need to spend on a karban chatas for doing an aver b'shogi? The Gemara says, it's a certain amount, very small amount, it's called a bas danka. What that translates in today, I don't know. But the Gemara then says, what about an asham tali? Somebody who has to bring an asham tali because they may have violated an avera, what's the minimal amount of money they need to spend on that? The Gemara says it is 48 times the amount of a karban chatas. So that's crazy. I violate Shabbos and I know I was mechala Shabbos, I have to spend a certain amount of money. I'm not sure whether I violated Naveira, I need to spend 48 times the amount of money to be mechaper for myself. How can that be? Why does that make sense? And once again, Rabbeinu Yonah explains the reason why is the very same. Because when somebody does something wrong, at least they're aware of the fact they did something wrong. And that's part of the tshuva process. I'm aware of what I've done wrong. I'm going to bring a karban, but I'm going to feel the remorse because I understand, I appreciate the gravity of what went wrong. When somebody has a suffix whether they did something wrong, says Rabbeinu Yonah, the natural instinct of a person is, I have to bring a karban. I probably really didn't do this. I'll bring the karban anyway. I'll say I'm sorry anyway, but I'm not really sure whether I did something wrong. So I don't really feel bad about what was done. Because in my heart of hearts, I believe it really wasn't done. And therefore, you need a bigger kapar, says Rabbeinu Yonah. If you violate Shabbos and you know you violated Shabbos, you have to spend a small amount of money on a karban. If you do something and you're not even sure whether or not you did it, in that case, says Rabbeinu Yonah, 48 times the amount is the only way to get yourself a kapara. Why? Because it's hard to internalize the fact that I may have done something wrong when I believe with my heart that I really have not done anything wrong. And that really ties into exactly what Rabbeinu Yonah writes here. Halbanas panim is more chamor than somebody who's a rotzeach mamish. The worst thing you can ever do in the world is ritzicha. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, not true. The worst thing you could ever do in the world is halbanas panim. It's worse than ritzicha. The rotzeach will get a chelek in olam haba. The malbim penei chaver barabim will not. Because they cannot appreciate or understand what they have caused to that other human being. The damage they have caused. The life that they have destroyed. Rabbeinu Yonah actually writes this, and it's quoted in the Ramah and Orach Chaim. The Ramah in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim writes, when we talk about tshuva, and we think about all the things that we have to reconcile with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rabbeinu Yonah writes an amazing statement that's quoted in Halacha, and that is, if we did an Avera, there's a certain level of tshuva we need to think about. Okay, all of us have done Averas, we've spoken Lashon Hara, we've been Mechal HaShabbos here and there, things that we've done wrong, I'm not making light of it, but all of us do things wrong, that's the way it goes. That's what human beings do. So we do tshuva. We have an opportunity to do tshuva. Lucky us. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, and it's quoted lahalach in the Ramah, someone who violates a safek aveira, someone who's not sure whether they were mechal Shabbos, needs more tshuva than the person who knows they were mechal Shabbos. How can that be? And Rabbeinu Yonah writes, it's the same point. Because somebody who knows they've done something wrong at least has charata for what they know they have done. Deep down they understand, I've done something wrong, and now I feel bad about it. In the moment, I didn't care. In the moment, I just did something impulsively. I did what I felt I wanted to do or had to do. And now I feel bad about it. Now that I came back to my senses. Somebody who violates a safek aveira, says Rabbeinu Yonah, they're in denial. They're in denial of the fact that they've done anything wrong in the first place. And therefore, that person requires a more intense process of tshuva in order to get over what it is that they have done wrong. Rabbi Yerucham Lebavitz, the Mashgiach of the Mir Yeshiva in Europe, has a very interesting comment where he explains, the Gemara tells us that when you have a Parnes HaMemuna Ala Tzibur, when you choose someone for a position of authority over the community, whatever that might be, a principal of a school, whoever it is, somebody who has a position of authority, says the Gemara, the only person you're allowed to choose is somebody who has a Kupa Shal Shratzim Talei Lo Me'achorav. Yeah, you heard right. Somebody who has a box of shrutzim, is rodents, hanging over their shoulder. What does that mean? You want to choose somebody who has baggage? Why do we want to choose somebody who has baggage? Don't we want to take the person who has a clean slate, who's never done anything wrong? So it's a strange comment of the Gemara that many have tried to explain. Rabbi Yerucham Lebavitz explains the following. Choose somebody who's at least self-aware of their shortcomings, of their weaknesses. Not that we publicize this to the world, but at least choose somebody who is aware of the fact that they have failures in life. Choose somebody who's aware of the fact that they've done things that may not have been the right choices and the right decisions at every moment of their lives. Instead of choosing an arrogant person who doesn't believe that they can ever do anything wrong. Because that is going to end in disaster. Somebody who thinks they're untouchable, somebody who thinks they are invincible, somebody who thinks they can never do anything wrong, is the person who will self-implode and bring down the whole community with them. Writes Rabbi Yerucham Lebavitz, the Gemara tells us here, you want to know who to choose as a leader of a community? It's the person who has a kupa shal shratzim talei lo me'achorav. Somebody who is at least self-aware enough to recognize and to be cognizant of the fact that they have struggles, that they have imperfections, that they have weaknesses, as opposed to somebody who's totally oblivious and unaware and inattentive to the shortcomings and the failures of their own life. Because that is the person that's able to be a growing person. Everybody has things wrong. And that's what I think about. You know, when they send around these videos on WhatsApp, it drives me nuts. I remember during COVID, there were a lot of crazy videos going around. And people showed videos of, like, you know, somebody standing in the supermarket, his pants fell down. Like, why is that a video that we're supposed to send around? It's so humiliating. It's so embarrassing. Imagine that was you. You're standing in the supermarket, your skirt falls down, somebody takes a video of it and sends it to China. So it happens not to get around your friends, but they send it around to a whole community of people, and everybody just keeps sending it to another person. Imagine that was you. Imagine that was you. We all have embarrassing moments in our lives. You think that person in the supermarket's the only person that ever had an embarrassing moment? You've also had plenty of embarrassing moments in your life that you're praying to God nobody will ever find out about, right? And yet you have no problem forwarding that video because it's somebody else. Says Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz, be self-aware enough to understand we all have shortcomings, we all have things wrong, we all have weaknesses. When you think about life from that perspective, and you're at least self-aware enough to admit to it, maybe you'll think the same way about other people as well. They also have a shortcoming. And maybe when a scandal comes out about them or they do something wrong, it's not my job to share it with the world. It's not my job to perpetuate that humiliation. Let somebody else do it. And if it comes to my phone, I'm going to stop it there. It doesn't need to go further. I don't need to forward it. Because it's embarrassing to that individual. It's embarrassing to them. One of the Hasidic Rebbes writes an amazing comment, and we'll end with this. I think we've had an intense enough morning. So one of them has an amazing comment where he says, we contrast the Chet HaMaraglim with the Chet HaEgel. If I would ask you which one of these two Averis was worse, Chet HaMaraglim or Chet HaEgel, which one would you say? Chet HaEgel, serving Avodah Zarah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you, I'm about to give you the Luchos. Moshe Rabbeinu is coming down from Har Sinai. This is the highest, most glorious moment in Jewish history. And they go and they serve Avodah Zarah. And as a result of that, Moshe Rabbeinu breaks the Luchos that were written by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, like my father says, author's copy. That was the most prized possession ever in the history of the world. That was destroyed because the Jewish people were serving Avodah Zarah. What can get worse than that? So yes, saying Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael is bad, and not having Emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to take care of you is bad, I understand. But in the grand scheme of things, which one is worse? I would venture to say, what's worse is obviously Chet HaEgel as opposed to Chet HaMaraglim. And yet, what happens by the Chet HaEgel? Chet HaEgel, we're told, Moshe Rabbeinu asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu to forgive the Jewish people. And Chet HaMaraglim, they were not forgiven for. Chet HaEgel, we're told, Vayomer Hashem Salachti Kidvarecha. We say it on Yom Kippur. Vayomer Hashem Salachti Kidvarecha. Do you understand? I always think about this on Yom Kippur. We've done things wrong throughout the year. I assume none of us have served Avodah Zarah this past year. The Jewish people served Avodah Zarah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was willing to say, you know what? Vayomer Hashem Salachti Kidvarecha. It's okay. I see that you're sincere, I understand it, I appreciate it, and I accept it. You're forgiven. We come on Yom Kippur and we say, what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be okay with whatever it is that I may have done? Trust me, you didn't serve Avodah Zarah. We say those words, Vayomer Hashem Salachti Kidvarecha, that yes, tshuva is a possibility for you. It was a possibility for the Jews in the desert who did something far worse than what you may have done this year. And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted their tshuva. Have some faith in yourself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can accept your tshuva as well. Whatever it is that you may have done, it's okay. Well, why is it? Vayomer Hashem Salachti Kidvarecha comes to serving Avodah Zarah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm willing to accept it. Let's move on. Comes to Chet HaMaraglim? No. You're going to suffer and pay the consequence and the price of that forever. Why? What's the difference? So I don't know what all the interpretations are, but one of the Hasidic Rebbes writes in his Sefer on Chumash an amazing comment where he suggests, when it came to Chet HaEgel, it was the first mistake that the Jews have ever done. It was the first thing they'd ever done wrong from the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Can you imagine how broken they were? I would imagine they said, that's it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is abandoning us. We're done. He's not interested in us. If we weren't interested in Him, why should He be interested in us? Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to them and He says, Vayomer Hashem salachti kidvarecha. And the entire Jewish people have a communal sigh of relief. Wow. Look what just happened. We even served Avodah Zarah and we got away with it. And we got away with it. Well, the next time around, what happens? They do the Chet HaMeraglim, and some people are nervous, and the rest of the Jewish people are saying, eh, what's the big deal? We did worse than this. We got away with it. It's fine. God will be okay with it. Nobody really felt bad the second time around. The first time you make a mistake, and you're begging for forgiveness because you know that life is in the balance, you don't know what's going to be, you're sincere about it. The next time around, you realize you got away with it, and it's okay. A woman walks out on her husband because he did something so egregious to her, because he was so disrespectful to her, because he threatened her, whatever it might be, and she says, you know what? I want a divorce. The first time it smacks him in his face, and he realizes, I have no recourse, I have no option left. This woman is going to drop me. I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life. I'm going to lose my children. Everything I built my whole life is lost. Maybe he'll have sincerity at that moment because it slaps him in the face. But what happens if they go for therapy and they reconcile and they get back together and somehow they get over that terrible hurdle, whatever may have happened? And now, what's going to happen the next time around? How bad is he really going to feel? Not really, because he knows what happens. We go for therapy, we work it out, and everything's fine. He realizes that it's not as intense as he thought it was, because he can do things wrong and get away with them. And therefore, says this beautiful shot on Chumash, maybe that's the difference between the Chet HaMeraglim and the Chet HaEgel. Chet HaEgel was the first thing they did wrong. They realized, my marriage is over. If I don't figure out how to take care of this, my marriage is over. And they pleaded and they begged with HaKadosh Baruch Hu until he said, Vayomer Hashem salachti kidvarecha. If a person is sincere, if a person really means what they say, if a person craves for that relationship, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is interested in it. Comes to Chet HaMeraglim and everybody says, we have a memory of something we just did recently and it was fine. You know what? If we're going to be fine, we'll be fine. We don't have to trouble ourselves too much to find the favor in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have it anyway. We've done far worse and gotten away with it. And therefore, says Rabbeinu Yonah, even though it sounds paradoxical, that a rotzeach mamish, somebody who actually is engaged in the act of murder, has a chelek in olam haba. It's a mistake. It's a horrific crime. It's something they've done wrong and they're going to have to pay a heavy price for it. But ultimately, after that price is paid, you have a chelek in olam haba. Halbanas panim doesn't work that way. Because you will never fully appreciate what price you need to pay for the damage that you have caused. You will never fully appreciate how much hurt there was as a result of what you've done. You can't see it. It's not quantifiable. It's not something that we can really sense. It's not something we can measure. And as a result of that, we don't feel as bad as we should because we don't realize the depth of the pain that is caused by what it is that we've done. And therefore, says Rabbeinu Yonah, that is why the Mishnah says, this person, this individual, ein lo chelek le'olam haba. As we get ready to celebrate Lag BaOmer, I know this was not such a celebratory shir, and many people in the world are going to tell you many different things in the name of Reb Shimon ben Yochai, maybe you'll understand them and maybe you won't. This is something all of us can understand. It's a comment of Reb Shimon ben Yochai, an instructive comment that is quoted in the Gemara four different times, all in the name of Reb Shimon ben Yochai, and it's something practical. You want to celebrate Lag BaOmer, make a pledge this Lag BaOmer, I will never again do something like that. I will never again be involved in forwarding that embarrassing piece of information. I will never again respond when I'm on that parent chat in my child's class and they're destroying one of the teachers or one of the administrators, whatever it is. I will never engage in that. If I have a problem, I'm going to talk to the person themselves. I will not be involved in public humiliation. I will not allow for this horrific crime to continue to be perpetuated. It's not going to happen because of me. That is a celebration of Lag BaOmer. That is something practical and meaningful we can take away from the life of Reb Shimon ben Yochai, from the teachings of Reb Shimon ben Yochai, and something we can infuse into the daily lives that we live. I wish